digression onto me for a moment here. I spent 8 years working in tuberculosis control in Massachusetts before I started my PhD research at Johns Hopkins. And so just to give you a little background. So I have something in common with at least 2 out of 3 of the members on the panel. So Johns Hopkins and recent PhD work. This section, this particular talk, is about looking at sort of the earliest stage of tuberculosis control, which is finding out who your cases are. This work was a collaborative study between Johns Hopkins University and the Prefeitura of Health in Rio de Janeiro. And just the title is Respiratory Symptoms and Care-Seeking Behavior in a Brazilian Favela. And a favela, although I've called it a slum for shortening purposes, a favela is really a squatter settlement. So this is illegally inhabited land. I just wanted to give you that context before I started. And okay, great. Oh, excellent. Look at it go. Okay, so I'm going to skim over this slide because I'm assuming that most of us here in the room know about the devastating global burden of tuberculosis. And I just put this up to show you that for the Western Hemisphere, Brazil has a huge burden in relation to the rest of the Western Hemisphere. It has, I believe, the 16th highest TB burden in the world. I think we're down from 15th. Is that right? WHO guy? No? Okay, all right. So we're going to say yes, down from 15th. So we're looking, things are looking up in Brazil. But we still have about 110,000 cases and 7,000 deaths per year. There we go. The incidence rate of tuberculosis in Brazil is about 60 per 100,000. And in the cities, it's much higher. In Rio de Janeiro, it's 120 per 100,000. And you compare that to the U.S., in 2005, we were at 4.8 per 100,000. So this, in general, demonstrates that there's a big problem with tuberculosis in Brazil. And the cornerstone of tuberculosis control is to identify and treat infectious cases as soon as possible. So what are some of the factors that contribute to time to diagnosis? At any second now. There we are. Okay. Again, as many of us know, delays in diagnosis obviously lead to treatment delay. And the sooner an infectious case starts treatment, the less opportunity they have to infect other people. And that's the public health view of tuberculosis control, but also from an individual patient care perspective. The sooner you get people in for care, the less likely they are to progress to late-stage disease, and then it's much more difficult to treat. So this is getting them patients into care early is good for both the individuals and the community. Diagnostic delay in general consists of these two components, so provider delay and patient delay. And this study is not going to look at all at provider delay, which includes things like misdiagnoses and time to get lab results and things like that. So the factors that are associated with patient delay in many studies are things like access to care, which is a huge umbrella. That includes things like not knowing where to seek treatment, if treatment is free, not knowing that treatment is free, or not having the resources to seek treatment, things like that. Also, low awareness of disease. So tuberculosis can mimic other things. You know, the cough and the night sweats and things aren't particularly specific to patients, so they may not know what the symptoms of tuberculosis are. There's also severity of symptoms. We've found that people who have hemoptysis, if you're coughing up blood, you seek care for that. But pretty much anything else on the spectrum, a lot of people don't seek care. They don't recognize the severity of the symptoms. And also age and gender are associated with diagnostic delays, as Emily found in her study. Women, interestingly enough, in some countries, in some studies in the U.S. particularly, were more likely to seek care and had less delay. But in other countries, and I think you know some of the pastoralist societies that you were talking about, they are more likely to delay seeking care, and this could have something to do with the general value of women's health in some countries versus others, some cultures, or could be to do with where women seek care. So, you know, a lot of times they'll seek care at traditional healers first and then go to the clinics afterward. So the context for this study was that, this is a picture. So here's the problem. I threw in a lot of pictures. So relax. There we are. All right. Okay. In this particularly densely populated, impoverished area of Rio de Janeiro, the favela of Rocinha, the Prefeitura of Health wanted to expand directly observed therapy via active case finding. Now, Rocinha presents some challenges, as you can see just by looking at it. This is very densely populated, very impoverished area. The population is unknown, really, but estimates range from 60 to 100,000 people living in about a half mile square area. Let's see, it has very high estimated rates of tuberculosis. As I mentioned before, in Rio in general, the rates of TB are about 120 per 100,000, but in Jocinha, they're much higher. 350 per 100,000 is a conservative estimate. This is a hotbed of tuberculosis and other infectious disease transmission. In addition, another challenge faced in Jocinha is that it's a very unsettled environment. The drug trade in Jocinha is massive and thriving and violent. So this is sort of a war zone, and there are periodic clashes between drug lords and police, drug lords and other drug lords, people trying to take over the business and so forth. So in this particular setting, this is, as I said, an unsettled, very challenging environment to work with. But the Prefeitura, in collaboration with Johns Hopkins University and a local Catholic church in the area, in 2003 started a community health agent program to do directly observed therapy. Now, Brazil has constitutionally mandated access, universal access to healthcare, but that is so hard to implement. So one of the ways in which they're trying to do this is with these community health teams. And our program was started specifically for directly observed therapy, but then after a couple of years of directly observed therapy, they moved into doing sort of the rest of community health agent work, which involves diabetes care, pre- and postpartum care, cardiovascular issues, nutritional issues, things like that. But I digress. So what I wanted to say about this is that the community health agent program in Jocinha was extremely successful. We had 90% completion of therapy rates in this area in the last 3 years. So this is a very thing that we're very excited about, and particularly because it's in such a difficult setting. So the rationale, the context for this study is within the context of this larger community randomized trial of active case finding in Jocinha. So passive case finding, you know, is when the patient feels sick and comes to us, the health system, for care. Active case finding is the opposite, when we, the health system, go out and look for cases. Passive case finding has generally in the past been the World Health Organization's recommended strategy because in several countries and several studies in the past, it appeared that people with symptoms were coming to look for care, but they were being misdiagnosed. So in areas of limited resource, it was felt to be a better sort of bang for your buck to try and use the resources to beef up diagnostics rather than going and looking for cases that you might not really identify anyway. But in Rio de Janeiro and in Brazil, they actually have a pretty good, pretty sophisticated diagnostic labs and things like that. So what we were interested in is, in Jocinha, were people with symptoms seeking care? So our objectives, which halfway through my talk I'm finally getting to, are to determine the community prevalence of cough and whether coughers in this area sought medical evaluation. So our methods. We had 50 community health workers who were already administering directly observed therapy in Jocinha. They were trained to perform a symptom screen and sputum collection. We did a cross-sectional house-to-house survey of all residents in half of Jocinha. We made 3 visits to each house to try to interview everyone personally. The results from sputum collection, so anyone who had cough for at least 3 weeks, we asked to collect a sputum from them. And anyone who had sputum collected, the results from that were brought back to the household and reported directly to the person who had given the sputum in the first place. Active cases, when found, were treated as per the standard of care in Brazil. We had IRB approval from Johns Hopkins and from the Brazilian Commission of Ethics, and we obtained oral consent from all participants. So our, because we're doing this study in, you know, half of Jocinha, which is anywhere from 30 to 50,000 residents, we didn't have a whole lot of questions that we could ask everyone. Because imagine how boring it is for the community health agents to ask the same 5 questions over and over and over and over and over, and how long it would take. Okay, there we go. I was going to say, I'm scatting away up here. I'm just waiting for the thing to change. So these are the questions that we limited ourselves to. Demographics, TB history, if someone had a cough, how long they had had the cough, did anyone else in the house have TB, and if the cough was present for at least 3 weeks, had you sought care for symptoms, and if so, where and when? Our analysis, we used Stata. We did 2x2 tables for exploratory analysis, and we assumed that both cough and care-seeking behavior would be correlated by household. So your likelihood of coughing would be more like the people in your household than the people outside your household, and your care-seeking behavior, whether or not you were going to seek care for this cough, would be more likely to be similar to the people in your household than people outside the household. So we decided to do generalized estimating equations using a binomial model and an exchangeable correlation. This is the flowchart for the overall study. We are not going to look at the study arm in which we did not go to the households. So we're confining ourselves to this group on the left. And you can see we identified about a little over 11,000 households. And we contacted 24,177 residents. We were able to screen 23,801 people, so 98% of the residents we contacted. Of these 23,801 people, 1,310 identified themselves as having a cough. 8% of those had sought evaluation for their symptoms. 430 reported having a cough for at least 3 weeks, of which 15% reported seeking evaluation for their symptoms. 13 of these people had smear-positive pulmonary tuberculosis. One had already sought evaluation prior to our arrival there. So if you think about it, 93% of the smear-positive pulmonary cases coughing for 3 or more weeks that we identified had not sought care for their symptoms prior to our arrival on the scene. So the next slide looks at just some characteristics associated with care-seeking behavior. So of our 1,310 individuals, we looked at the characteristics. So gender was not actually related to care-seeking behavior. What was related were age. So infants and very young children were more likely to be taken for care, had a higher odds of being taken for care than anyone over that age or adults. History of TB, not related. Cough, people with a longer duration of cough were also more likely to seek care. However, as I mentioned, that's only 15%, but it's compared to 5%. We couldn't really analyze contact status because no one who coughed and was a contact, a household contact to someone with TB, bothered to seek care for their symptoms. So we weren't really able to look at that. But I'm putting that up there just to show you all. So of the 111 who sought medical evaluation, 106 provided further information. We looked at a couple of different things as to where people sought care. We looked at public versus private, and we also looked at emergency room versus clinic, health post, doctor's office. And this is that second table. So 54% of the people that sought care for symptoms sought care at hospital emergency rooms, and 46 sought care at health posts or doctor's offices. And there aren't really any differences here, any statistically significant differences here, I should say. And that may have something to do with the fact that we only have 106 cases that we're looking at. However, if you look at the gender here, a much higher percentage of women sought care at emergency rooms and hospitals than at clinics, and the other way around for men. So men were much more likely to seek care at the health posts and clinics than they were at emergency rooms and hospitals. And public versus private, we didn't find really anything different at all, so I didn't even bother to make that into a table. So just to wrap up, people with respiratory symptoms in Hosenia are not generally seeking care for their symptoms. But children are more likely to be taken for care than adults to seek care for themselves. So perhaps pediatric clinics or pediatric facilities would be a good place to provide some education and training about tuberculosis and symptoms, or symptom screening of adults that are bringing the children for care. People who had been coughing for more than 3 weeks were more likely to seek care, which is great, but again, only 15% of those were seeking care. Interestingly, at least to me, people who had a history of active tuberculosis weren't any more likely to seek care for their symptoms than people who did not. So I'm assuming, and this may just be an assumption on my part, that if you've had TB in the past, you're going to recognize what the symptoms are. You're going to know that care is free. You're going to know where to go for care, et cetera, et cetera. But somehow that didn't translate, this knowledge did not translate into any action on their part. It could be that people who have had TB in the past then believe that you can't get it again, so this must have been something else. So that's a possibility. But I still was sort of interested in that particular fact. I'm going to skip over the next slide because we've already talked about this. There's nothing, just that gender, TB history, and contact status weren't associated with increased care-seeking behavior. And so finally, on to some weaknesses and strengths. One of the main weaknesses of this study is that because we were doing this study, as I mentioned before, in such a huge number of people, we had to limit the questions that we were asking. So some of the traditional factors that are usually associated with care-seeking behaviors, such as education, literacy, and SES, were not able to be assessed. However, in other studies that we've done, Hosinia itself is not particularly homogeneous, not particularly heterogeneous with respect to these factors. Like 77% of people in one of our studies reported having a family income of less than $400 a month. So there's a large group of people with sort of this homogeneous SES status. And also the same thing is true of education level. Something like 88% of the people that we interviewed had some primary education, but hadn't finished primary education. Care at the health post is free and accessible by public transportation. There are two roads in Hosinia. Everything else is footpaths, and the buses go, grind their way up and back down again. So it's, and within a half mile, public access to public transportation is very easy. So we don't think that that would be an issue. Some of the really good strengths, a major strength of this, is that we used community members as research staff. So the residents of Hosinia were hired as our community health agents, and I think that that helps to explain why we had such low refusal rates. So we approached, as I said, 24,177 people, and we had 51 refusals. So I think that said something, my sister, who's a physician, suggested that perhaps that implied coercion of some kind, but two levels of refusal that households could refuse, and then individuals within the households could refuse. And so we did have more refusals in the overall households, but that was only still about 2% of the households that we interviewed refused to participate. One of the other things that I thought was interesting is that our community health agents in the community followed directly observed therapy protocol better than the clinic staff. So I found that sort of interesting and exciting. A big issue is that to control tuberculosis, or really any communicable disease in Brazil's cities, you have to control it in the favelas, because the favelas are right smack in the middle of the city, and the people that live in the favelas work in the city. They're the people that are, bagging the groceries and working the elevators and the doormen and the parking lot attendants and the waiters and the wait staff and the nannies. So in order to, any strategy that's going to involve tuberculosis control has to involve the favelas as well. And so the fact that we, in this very unsettled environment, were able to screen so many people, I think, says very good things about the possibility for future involvement. Possible future directions are to increase, I think we could increase both passive and active case finding in this area to increase case detection. Passive case finding would, maybe involve some media involvement, because a lot of the favelas do have local radio stations and cable, local access cable stations, which people watch. And so I think that that would be a good way to educate the population about it. And also, the community health agents in a lot of favelas are already in the area, and so to use people who are community health agents going to people's homes for these other aspects, I think it would be a good way to do active case finding in the area. And with that, I'm going to acknowledge my co-authors, our clinic staff, the residents of Hosinia for their participation, and our wonderful 50 community health agents.